I have a friend who's a, a library film composer and produces podcasts, and I was talking to him. I was giving him the kind of same thesis I talked about today, and he's like, "Yeah, I get it, but like I'm the one who's going to lose the job." 'Cause this very specific specified job he has of composing kind of anonymous music for podcasts, and he's successful. He wrote the theme to Serial, and he's done a lot of big podcasts, New York Times and NPR, and but he's like, that's probably the functional music which employed a lot of composers is probably not going to be needed as much.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with Drew Thurlow.
I have this theory that, like, with all these AI hallucinations that are happening, that's going to become its own, like, creative aesthetic. And you're going to start to see, like, that AI vocal models, the early AI vocal models, they're like, they just sound bad. There's like this warble. It's like super mid, it's like the highs and the lows are gone. It's like lo-fi mid compressed.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible, but I bet in like 8 years, someone's going to be paying a lot of money for a AI vocal model plugin to make that aesthetic sound as an artistic treatment.
You know, it's really interesting, I think, because we have that whole uncanny valley thing that if it is really close to human, we sort of get put off a little by it.
Yeah.
And so I think what you're talking about would be going in the complete opposite direction. We know it's AI. We know it's manufactured. We know it's created. And it's just out there. And that way we're sure.
Yeah. And I love watching, like, I spend way too much time on TikTok and Instagram like everybody else. But I love watching those AI videos that are like clearly AI, where it's like a gorilla interviewing someone in a fake.
The baby and the dog. Did you see that one?
But you're right.
But the clever part of that was the writing, not the AI, right? It was clever how they decided to display it. But the real cleverness of that was the writing of the script.
Yeah. And then the human in the loop, which is a term that we hear more and more. It's part of what the EU AI Act is memorialized. But like the human in the loop is still really important and really matters. And that is still going to be really important. And the people who use AI as a tool to further their creative ends are going to be the winners, and they're going to just be able to be so much more productive.
So do you ever talk to students about this kind of thing? Or
I do. Yeah. I guess lecture as much as I can. I really enjoy it. I would love a more regular teaching gig. I had one at NYU kind of when I was doing A&R, and then I left A&R. But I'm very much motivated to mentorship, and I've guest lectured in the last year at Northeastern, Syracuse, NYU, few others. It's a really important, and I'm really, especially the music students that I've gotten to know at Syracuse and Northeastern and NYU, I'm really impressed with how they think about music and the skill sets that they grow up with that are native to them. And so I think and they're coming up in an era where people are taking things very seriously and that it's being managed properly, and I'm really excited for the future for me and them.
Yeah. So when you're talking with those students, what do you want them to know about the upcoming tech? What should they know?
They should know that nobody has any idea what they're doing.
That's such a good point.
We're just trying to figure it out as we go.
Yep.
It's funny to me that I'm seen as some kind of authority in certain contexts. You know, and I get it, right? Like I've been doing this for 20 something years.
You've seen a lot of things come and go. I think that is what gives you the experience to be able to comment on this, because, everything old is new again.
Yeah,
right?
It is. And I'm, I was a senior vice president at Sony to a degree that means anything. Mm-hmm. And, I have this book coming out, but like every week I just come across something, and I'm humbled every day by what I don't know. And every week something in this AI, even just AI music sector, is like surprises me. So I think the rules aren't written, everything is, everyone's figuring out as they go. It's a lot of interesting intersection between like AI and the whole, you know, the creator economy and how so many of us's future is, you know, being a solo business owner or personality and figuring out their way. So a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit is really important. Even if you are employed at a big company, that's really important. I would encourage students to have curiosity be your superpower. And community is also really, really important. It was really important for me when I was starting out 20, 25 years ago. It's even more important now with so much more noise out there and so many more distractions and so much more music and so many people doing it. It's important to have a community to filter and curate and understand how this stuff fits in context.
Yeah, very much so. Totally agree with all of that. But when we're talking about technology and being introduced to new things, now we can get into the International Sound Awards, because I'm curious how you got into that. So did they approach you? Did you approach them, or what happened?
I don't remember. I think I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. And I think I
get it.
Yeah, it's been a good resource for me. It's been
totally.
I've had a lot of opportunities from it, but I think they just approached me and asked if I would be willing to be on the jury. And I'm always happy to, you know, be involved and learn. And so, yeah, I was happy to do so. And the companies that I was given to judge. Some of them I was thought were great, and some of them I was like, why did you pay to do this?
You know, I was kind of the same way. There were some that I listened to. I was like, I don't know if that's really all that original.
Yeah, this isn't even like, did you make this in 3 minutes? Mm. Like, I don't know. But some of them I thought were really, really interesting. And I wish I could come to the award show, but it's
in Germany.
It's in Germany.
I'm in the same boat. I would love to go at some point. You know, I will probably never make it to France. I wish one of these days.
Yeah. So, but you've been doing this for a few years now, right? This isn't your first.
Yeah. You mean voiceover or the podcast?
No, judging the.
Oh, judging. It's been about, this is my third year doing it. Yeah. And in fact, in the last couple of years, we would all gather over Zoom and I would moderate.
Okay.
So we'd all discuss all of the entries and have a really interesting discussion about a lot of them. And in some cases, some of the experience and ideas that other people had about some of the things I had heard and seen and listened to kind of changed my opinion a little bit. Not usually drastically, but enough so that it would lower or raise my point by a little bit more, you know, just a little bit.
Perspective is important. Yeah. I mean, I was only, I think the people running it did a good job. They, you know, they gave me things that were in my wheelhouse, but looking at some of the scores after the fact, absolutely. I was like, oh, I'm surprised someone else saw it that way. I saw it completely different. So, but that's really necessary and interesting.
Yeah. I think the reason we didn't do it this year was because it was a really quick turnaround because they wanted to have the awards show at a certain date.
Yeah.
So last year and the year before, we had a little more time. I usually get it done like the week after they send it to me, probably, or quicker. You know, I think I even looked at it the Sunday after or the Sunday they sent it to us. And usually my first impressions are pretty much what I stick to, because it's important about, for me, it's as important about how it makes you feel as the technology of it is. Like there are obviously things that are pros and cons in each entry, but how it makes me feel is a really big aspect of that, because the whole motive of the awards is to make better sound, to make the world sound better.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's a good lesson in evaluating anything, especially in the arts, and doing A&R as long as I did, and now evaluating music tech startups for my fund. It's feels very similar. You're right. First impressions often stick.
Mm. Yeah, very much so. So you are investing in a lot of new tech and trends and such. What are you seeing now that you think is going to be very instrumental in the future? I'm curious.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening. So it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, it's a good question. The trend right now is the boring stuff in music. I think we
need the boring stuff.
Yeah,
though.
That's I mean, at a macro level of the music industry, you know, streaming's growth is slowing down. You know, we're running out of subscribers in the West and North America, Western Europe and North America. And so labels and rights holders and artists are kind of in the mood to count their pennies, keep growth going. And that means that the horribly inefficient system of digital music and copyright royalty collection, which has been lingering for far too long, needs some help. So a lot of the startups that are getting traction are ones that like do black box royalty collection. Black box royalties are royalties that are accrued at a PRO or a somewhere, but don't have a rights holder attached to them.
So like BMI and ASCAP and
yeah.
That kind of stuff. Okay.
They don't have a rights holder attached to them because someone didn't claim it or someone filled out the sheet wrong or like just messy data entry stuff. So cleaning up that and distribution models where people can get paid faster and where the royalties and splits and the artists who are involved can get paid out a little bit more seamlessly. So things like that. And then there's the content moderation and anti-piracy. Streaming is a lot of fraud and it's not really AI yet, but it might be in the future. So there's a lot of anti-piracy and content moderation tools that are necessary that are growing. And then we have the creator tools, the ones that integrate with a DAW or independent that engender music creation. And then we have some tools that like help the business. They help with streaming optimization. They help with content generation, like assets, like video and audio and other kinds of marketing functions. And then there's a live sector and ticketing, which could use some disruption. And
oh yeah, there's like a monopoly in that right now, isn't
yeah.
there?
It's complicated. The way, you know, ticketing is probably the one part of the music industry that hasn't been really disrupted. That has to do with the way Ticketmaster has contracts with physical venues. So it's very much more of an IRL thing, which is harder to disrupt digitally, but there's people working on that, that some good startups that I like. And then there's like, you know, sync licensing could use some help. It's just this very antiquated way of sync licensing a master and publishing. So there's a few startups in that sector that are interesting. And then there's like, there's a lot of, surprisingly, there's a lot of like new instruments. Really?
Like what?
Tech infused instruments.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
And music education platforms and tools that are really, really interesting and powerful, using AI to kind of help self-learn. I mean, AI and ed tech is not outside of music, is also a really vibrant field. But so like I saw a smart flute. I evaluate that how you will. I didn't get into it, but like.
I'm not sure how you would do that, but okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I know there are violins like that. There are, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
I'm pretty sure there
are. Yeah, like that'll go beyond like MIDI enabled. They're like something else. And then there's a lot of health and wellness audio and, you know, some environmental audio companies. And yeah, it's a broad sector. I mean, I'm tracking about 740 music tech startups right now.
Wow.
And they're partly because I write about it for Billboard, partly because I'm just curious, but no, not all of them are credible. In fact, most of them are not, but it's really easy to have a startup these days. So a lot of people have them. Also, a lot of people out of work in our industry. So a lot of people have free time on their hands getting an idea up overnight because it's easy to do so now.
Where do you see this going with healthcare and wellness stuff like that? Have you seen any really interesting trends there?
There is a really interesting subset of this where technology is using haptics or biofeedback to suggest music to you. So, and there's a few companies that are doing this, but you know, you wear is like you have your Apple Watch. It can get your BPM of your pulse, and it can like respond to like changes in your skin.
There are all sorts of rings that do that too.
Yeah,
is that case in point.
Yeah, does that ring do that?
Yeah, it's called Ultra Human. Actually, I kickstarted it years ago. Actually, now, but it tracks your sleep schedule, it tracks your pulse, it tracks your brain health. Actually,
wow.
It tracks your cardiovascular, all sorts of, you know, your heartbeat and etc. It's really amazing, and they're getting better all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say the accuracy on those are like what I would question. I'm sure they'll get there, but are they there?
It's probably the same accuracy you'd get with a wristwatch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In fact, maybe a little better because, you know, it's always right next to your skin and not usually moving around too much, depending on, you know, how well it fits. But they make sure that you go through a very interesting fitting process before you get the end result. So, yeah, it's and, you know, it's something that doesn't disrupt your sleep. Because, you know, sometimes if you have something around your wrist, it might actually prevent you from sleeping. Like if it annoys you, right? Like this is, so I find the rings a lot more useful than the wristwatches. But that's just me. I mean, maybe other people feel differently, but.
But if a ring can track your pulse and your sleep cycle and your brain health and all that, well, then it's a short stop to have them suggest music based on your bio state. So there's a lot, and then there's some companies that are doing that, and then, you know, adaptive audio companies using machine learning and generative AI for health, also in the gaming environments, which is a big business where personalized music can adapt to you and your environment. It kind of reads your environment. So those are interesting companies.
Yeah. One of the other things that the app does for the ring is that it gives you breathing exercises. So I imagine an app that works with a music delivery system of some kind could offer you meditative music or, you know, things made. There's a company called Endel, I think, that makes meditative music or music for different mental states. Like if you want to focus or you want to sleep or if you want to have a nap or if you want to, you know, exercise, you know, all sorts of different reasons that you'd be listening to music. And then it sort of offers you these pieces.
I mean Endel's an interesting case because it's actually the first company that a major label did a deal with, and if you think about as to why, it makes sense because these major labels have a lot of kind of artist relations issues to deal with around AI. Some artists are not okay with it and a lot of anxiety, but what Endel does is what you described. It creates kind of the sleepy spa like remixes of popular music. So if you're Billie Eilish and Endel does a remix of you, it's not going to compete with your original, but it's going to allow your song to, new version of your song to appear in a spa where it's the original wouldn't. And it's articulated as this like health and wellness new sector of what you're doing. And it's the first, then there's another company called LifeScore, which is somewhat similar, that did a deal with Warner and at Universal. But those two companies were the first two that kind of did like public deals around AI with rights holders. And it's because I think the health and wellness gave it a little bit of a pass over like other generative tech, which is like a little bit more demonized.
Sure. Yeah. It's very dynamic, like you say. You know, they've made it for whatever your mood is. And like we were saying, I think if they have your pulse, then they'll know exactly where you are and what you need to hear. I think that's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
So lots of things coming into the market that I think are going to change our lives, hopefully for the better.
Most
I guess
of
we'll
us
see.
For the better. I have a friend who's a, you know, library film composer and produces podcasts, and I was talking to him, I was giving him the kind of same thesis I talked about today, and he's like, yeah, I get it, but like I'm the one who's gonna lose the job, because this very specific specified job he has of composing kind of anonymous music for podcasts. And he's successful. He wrote the theme to Serial, and he's done a lot of big podcasts, New York Times and NPR. But he's like, that's probably the functional music, which employed a lot of composers, is probably not going to be needed as much.
Hi, this is Nikolai Klock, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness the power in your own life, keep listening. Jody's doing an awesome job here. I hope you tune in.
Well, I think you're probably right about that, but at the same time, I don't think you should lose heart entirely, because what I talk about in audio branding is owning your media. So really, it's super important for anyone who has an audio brand like Serial or like those kinds of podcasts that are well known. They don't want to use, let's say, a license-free music directory, because anyone could use that music.
Yeah.
You want to own your own audio.
Right. At that level, they will. But he gets a lot of work.
Oh, just from being in a directory?
Yeah, just like from podcasts that wouldn't bother. And sure. I see that, you know, I ran the division at Sony that did most of the film and TV scores and gaming scores. And there's like little independent films out there that, you know, maybe $1 million budget. They may set aside 10 grand to do the score. Well, they're not going to have to pay a composer 10 grand anymore to make a score. And they're willing to take that cut because the generative AI instrumental music is probably going to be fine. And they're in a budget anyway. So it's like that kind of middle class of artist who makes a living writing music for reality TV and podcasts and independent gaming. Like, that's probably where it's most hit.
Yeah, where the good enough is good enough.
Right. Where the music's anonymous and behind the scenes and not the focal point of the media.
Yeah, although in a sense, I would kind of dispute that. And the only reason that I would dispute that is because it's very much making the emotions of that scene known. So if you're not feeling it, it's not as effective as it could be. It depends.
These generative
Maybe it's
AI,
good enough.
They get really good, though. And you can prompt them in ways that are very controllable.
Yeah.
It gets better all the time. When I first started tracking this stuff, I'm on the board of the Americana Music Association. I very much care about that community. And I remember the first like acoustic guitar sounds that came out of AI were pretty bad. And I was like, don't worry, everybody. Like, this is going to take a while. And then 6 weeks later, it wasn't true anymore. So I'm not putting I'm not putting any limits on how fast this tech can mature.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. You're right. Yeah. We'll have to see how things shape up and where the communities take things and how individual people become individual, how they make themselves more known and needed in this really interesting market that's changing all the time.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack. But for now, I'm going to ask you what you're working on now that you want to talk about, if you want to share anything.
Sure. Yeah. So the book I have, Machine Music, that I mentioned, is coming out in March. In the meantime, I do a lot of consulting in this space for artists, music companies, some indie labels, bigger labels, promoters. And if you're curious about music and AI and you want to learn more, you can find me on LinkedIn. And my DMs are open, and I do that. And then I have the music tech investment fund that I advise called Mindset Music. We've made our first 6 investments a few months ago, wrapping them up now. And then I mentioned Lone Wolves. It's an agency and a community for people in music. It started as kind of we were kind of born out of disruption, where there's a lot of us who are suddenly consultants and suddenly independent. And looking for consulting work or looking for a full-time job. And it's kind of ballooned into this really vibrant community around just people who work in music who have no interest in gatekeeping knowledge or time and just want to help each other and learn. And then we also do a music industry podcast with the co-founder, Lauren Blitzer, right? Myself and I do a podcast. A bunch of other things. Trying to just keep interested and stay engaged in really interesting things. I've done some talent buying for Live Nation and as well. And it's been good.
So since we're on a podcast, can you talk a little more about the podcast and how people can get in touch with you through that?
Yeah, it's called Lone Wolves, State of Music and Music Tech. And we talk about current music business issues, the recording industry, and technology and startups. And it's a really, Lauren is a former VP of business development at Sony and is very experienced in the industry. And we have guests on, we talk about gaming and AI and streaming and labels. And it's really interesting. And we just got some funding. So I hope to upscale our production, maybe to match yours, Jody. Because we do not, the operation you're running here is not what we're running. I would expect nothing less from a voiceover artist, but.
I am lucky enough to have a lot of help and people who are very talented at what they do. But this is actually right now, I think it's about a 4-person operation.
Wow. Yeah. And then, so Steve was who I met was on as the engineer. Do you edit this yourself?
Sean actually Sean. Is the and Sorry. The producer
yeah,
here.
Sean.
I do not edit it myself. My producer, audio and video, is a fellow named Umberto Franco, and he's a fellow voice talent in Portugal.
Oh, wow.
Very talented guy. And he has been with me on this podcast since the very beginning. In fact, even I had a podcast that only had about 30 episodes before this one, and he was even helping me with that one.
Wow.
So until I figured out where I was going to go with this.
Yeah.
But yeah, and we're approaching 300 episodes.
Wow.
So it's been going over 5 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Congrats. Yeah. It's the consistency is going to serve you, I think. And that's quite
every week. Yeah, I think that's important for musicians as well. Definitely the consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this, Drew. This has been a great conversation. I am looking forward to seeing where all of your work takes you into the future because, wow, the future is looking wild and weird and wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can have me on in 3 months and it could be a completely different story, a different stuff to talk about. So.
I'm sure we will do this again.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jody.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.